Hey, welcome to Friday's podcast. We're going to church early today. Our sermon is on Sodom and Gomorrah. It is something actually I didn't plan on talking about today, but I thought it was interesting because we were talking about voices being silenced and how that happens. And I think there's a couple of stories from the Old Testament that really, really teach us something, and it looked pretty obvious to me, but you be the judge on that. Also, Australia has a horrible cat problem. 2 million feral cats.
Imagine the shedding.
They're trying. They're rubbing up
every couch in the jungle.
Anyway, yeah, right. So it's bad. 2 million feral cats. The reasoning behind it and the thinking behind it, I don't even understand.
Yeah, but they're killing them with sausages.
Yeah. And so we get into that. Nobody seems to care. Also, the draft update. Hello.
You did pretty well, Glenn. Pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Pretty impressive.
You kind of did pretty well. I put Stu to the test, gave him the same amount of information. Pat agrees with me that Stu has more information about Game of Thrones than I do of football. Let's see if he could actually put the people in the right houses, if you will, for Game of Thrones. Did he put the characters in the right place? And you'll see how that turns out. Also, we don't know how the Notre Dame fire started. We talk a little bit about ISIS and our favorite, Ilhan Omar, a story we've never heard that you should, all on today's podcast.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Where do we start? President Trump siding with AOC and saying the VA is doing, it's doing great. The scaffolding workers that were smoking at Notre Dame.
But didn't you some crazy right-wing pundit say that it may have started by a cigarette? Did you hear that? You hear this guy?
He
was sure it was going to be a cigarette. And you know what else? If they tell you it wasn't a cigarette, that means they're lying about it.
Wait a minute.
They're hiding it.
Wait.
It's a pro-tobacco lobby.
It was
lobby.
Muslim smoking. Cher thinks that Bernie Sanders has gone too far. Cher. And now Joe Biden has to express his regret to Anita Hill, but I'm sorry, is not acceptable. It's not enough.
The revisionist history of this Anita Hill situation has got to stop. That one is incredibly frustrating.
May I ask Sarah in the control room, do we have the audio of Michelle Obama on the campaign trail? Barack knows. We got to change our history because... That's what's happening right now. We're changing our history. It's being changed. The Anita Hill thing is a great example of it.
It really is. I mean, basically, when you step back from it, what you're finding is just a fundamental change in policy, a fundamental transformation, the change of our history. But it's really a change in policy from the Democrat Party of when Clarence Thomas is getting tossed around in the media. And now, but they ended on, okay, look, we have no evidence that this happened. There's no evidence that any of this bad stuff happened. It's someone in a massive political moment trying to, trying to get on the Supreme Court. And someone comes up with an accusation that you can't prove at all. There's no evidence of it. So... obviously, Clarence Thomas is still going to make it to the Supreme Court. That's where they were. And obviously, after just going through Kavanaugh, it is a complete change of opinion. They now are saying you are guilty until proven innocent. And there's, of course, no way with a claim like this or the claim like Kavanaugh that you could ever prove someone innocent. Did Clarence Thomas sexually harass people around him? Well, no, I don't think he did. There's no evidence that he did. There's a couple of accusations. There's one major accusation. And now it's so much we've reversed this dynamic to guilty until proven innocent that Joe Biden is now forced to call Anita Hill and apologize for something. He didn't sexually harass her. Maybe some other women, but not Anita Hill, because he was on a committee that I guess they believed that they treated her badly in her unproven claim. So again, like every law suit or every criminal court proceeding, you would have one side give their argument and then the other side give their argument. It's every single time. That's how our system works. But now they want that to be tossed out. They want that to be just, you know, excised from America. Because now it's just, did she make the accusation? Yes, then he's guilty. And now Biden has to go through this ridiculous charade where he's calling a woman that he did nothing wrong to. And he has to act as if he did do something wrong and apologize for something that he didn't do. And that's not even enough. She's now saying that she wants more. Enough.
She said, I can't be satisfied by him just simply saying, I'm sorry for what happened to you. The focus on apology to me is one thing, but he needs to give an apology to all the other women and to the American public. What? Because we know how deeply disappointed Americans around the country were about what they saw. And not just women. There are women and men who have just really lost confidence in our government to respond to the problem of gender violence. This is insanity.
Didn't they accuse Clarence Thomas of making inappropriate jokes at work? Largely, that was the accusation.
Yes, that's all it was.
That's
that wasn't
gender violence.
Gender violence.
These terms they don't mean what these people think they mean. And this is,
keep using that word.
Yeah, it is essentially Princess Bride at this point. Mm-hmm. And it's postmodernism. Right, they are legitimately just redefining these words.
I keep feeling this strongly, and I don't think I've ever said this on the air, but I think it almost every day. Please, you need to keep a journal, and I mean that with us too. We need to keep a journal. We need to start writing down the things that are being changed and how they're being changed, because they're all being erased. They're just being erased. I'm doing a podcast today with a writer. She's a lefty, I guess, or, you know, kind of.
I think she would say that she's from the left, for sure.
Okay. And she's written for Playboy and everything else. She's very different. Very different. She's a brilliant writer. But she's just very open and honest. And so she's seeing stuff. She's like, wait a minute. I don't agree with that. Well, now she's completely, and I mean it, being erased. All of her articles and everything that she's ever written is just being taken down. They're just getting rid of it. They're erasing her from the internet. And it's
because she's essentially come out on a few things.
On a few things.
And said, hey, you know, maybe boys and girls are different.
Right.
Hey, you know, maybe these things that you guys are, this new brand of the left is a little insane. And you know what? Let's be honest about it. What they're saying isn't true. You can't do that. You can't have one step out of the chosen path, because as this is like crusade level religious sort of handling of
this is burning of books. They're just deleting them. When everything is digital, there's no bonfire. But that is exactly what's happening. They are burning books.
And this new left is a religion.
It is
a religion. You step one. I mean, you even talked about this with Van freaking Jones. Van Jones, a man who was literally, for part of his life, a communist. A communist.
Not a socialist, kids.
No.
A communist.
A radical revolutionary communist by his own telling.
He was
a guy
who was
in the Obama administration as what at the time was thought of like the real left fringe of the Obama administration.
A guy who said green is the new red.
Yes.
So he understood what the green movement was. He would understand the Green New Deal.
Yes.
Exactly for what it was. And I think he probably still would agree with it.
I bet he'd still support it.
I think he'd still support it. He's on the outs.
Yes. Because he did what? Talk to Donald Trump about a left-wing priority, criminal justice reform. And by the way, something that the Trump administration agreed with and was passed in bipartisan fashion. But because he would talk to the Trump administration about a left-wing priority, he's now being tossed to the side of the left. You have to be in lock freaking step. I was talking about this with Kamala Harris.
Mm-hmm.
who is, you know, running for president, of course, and you know, a top tier candidate.
I didn't think you were on the phone with her, like pillow talk.
Yeah, no, I just wanted to see what she was up to.
Yeah.
But tell me, can Kamala Harris survive the Democratic primary saying things like this? This is from her communications director. Kamala's support for Israel is central to who she is.
Nope.
She is firm in her belief that Israel has a right to exist and defend itself.
Nope.
Including against rocket attacks from Gaza.
Nope.
That is, if that, she needs to like, she needs to excise that from the internet. If anyone gets word that she thinks that Israel, because saying that Israel can defend itself against rocket attacks is one thing, and that's way too far for the Democratic Party today. But to go the step further and say that they are responding as if they were not the ones who started all this, as if they were not the ones targeting innocent Palestinians, and that's the reason these poor people in Gaza are firing rockets.
Bernie Sanders, the government is a racist government.
Yes, that's the acceptable position.
What?
Israel is run by a bunch of racists, and they're torturing innocent Palestinians all the time. That's the only acceptable position on the left right now. And I don't know that she can survive things like that. She will get criticized for saying that people can't defend themselves can defend themselves against rockets. That is how crazy this party is.
So here's the thing. I want to go back to keeping a journal. Here's the thing. Look at how much history we have lost over the last 100 years. They changed it slowly. Okay? They changed it slowly. But they had to because textbooks were out. And mm-hmm. So people were watching textbooks. It was printed. You'd bring the book home. Mom and dad go through it. You know, what is this? So you had to slowly do things. Well, they're not anymore. There are no textbooks anymore. Now you just change them overnight. And we are losing new history. History is being changed in real time. You have to write down what actually is happening and keep a journal. And don't necessarily tell everybody. Just keep a journal for what is happening right now. Because at some point, our kids won't have any idea of the truth. They will not have any idea of what this country was, how it really happened, who were the good guys, who were the bad guys, who did what. Because they're erasing all of it. They're changing our history, as Michelle Obama said. Barack knows we have to change our history. Well, that's exactly what's happening. But it is happening at a very rapid pace. People need clay pots, clay jars. Do you remember me saying that 15 years ago?
Sure.
We have to preserve our history, as people preserved histories in ancient days with the Dead Sea Scrolls, by putting them in caves in a clay pot. We have to preserve our history. It is being systematically erased. And I don't mean just the history of the founding of our country or any of it. I mean the history that's happening right now. And the history that's happening right now, it is no longer you're a problem if you're a conservative or a Christian. You are now a problem on the left if you disagree and fall out of line at all. This is becoming a fascistic party. And, you know what a fascist is. It doesn't matter if you're a Democrat, a Republican, or an independent. You could be a fascist. If you believe it's my way or the highway, if you believe that people don't have a right to their opinion, don't have a right to their own life, listen to this. I have been saying that you have a right to marriage. You have a right to marriage. Government has no place. I was there before Hillary and Barack and everybody else. There's no place for the government in your marriage ceremony.
Though I will say that is not their position. Their position is...
No, I know.
Is different than that.
But their position is, you must participate.
Mm-hmm.
You must participate.
The best of the Glenn Beck program.
Hi, it's Glenn. If you're a subscriber to the podcast, can you do us a favor and rate us on iTunes? If you're not a subscriber, become one today and listen on your own time. You can subscribe on iTunes. Thanks.
Oh my gosh. Let's go to Thomas Friedman first. If you want to know that the world is upside down, here's Thomas Friedman, a guy who I have disagreed with my entire life. And he just went down to the border. And then he goes on CNN. What would you expect Thomas Friedman to say on CNN about a border wall? Well, it definitely wasn't this. Listen.
I'm as radically pro-immigration as they come. But it's pretty clear to me that unless we can assure a significant number of Americans that we can control our border, we're never going to have the proper immigration flow I think we need, we desire, and that we have actually a moral responsibility, given our history as a nation of immigrants and a refuge for people fleeing persecution. I think the only way is a compromise on this. The tragedy, and that's why my column was said Trump is wasting this crisis. A crisis is a terrible thing to waste. We have a president who actually, when you think about it, Wolf, he has the chops with his base. If he were to sit down, call Nancy Pelosi up, say, we're going up to Camp David, you bring your immigration team, I'll bring mine, I'll leave Stephen Miller at home, and we will actually sort out a compromise here, where, because Democrats were ready to fund more border security, but at the same time, we're going to create a legal pathway for people here, we're going to limit the number of ICE arrests, and we're going to have a rational inflow of people, of the kind of people that are both high energy, high IQ, that can actually drive our country forward. We need a compromise.
When you say, though, you want a high wall with a big gate,
yes,
a smart gate, but a high wall, that's going to sound to a lot of folks out there, that's what Donald Trump wants.
Well, I think you got to control the border. When you have an increase of illegal apprehensions of illegal entries of 374% since October, obviously you've got a situation where the border security is not sufficient, and that's going to drive people who we should want to be pro-immigration against immigration. Democrats have been willing to fund more border security, okay? I'm for a high wall with a big gate, a compassionate, a smart gate, so we can keep immigration going, but you're not going to do that. Wolf, if people think people can just walk into this country, they're not going to support the immigration that we need.
Enough. There you go. Welcome to the club, wow. Thomas Friedman. That's exactly what we've been saying. That's what Donald Trump has said. It's going to be a big, beautiful wall with a big, beautiful door in it. But there's going to be a wall. There has to be a wall. There has to be security on the border. And we have been painted as people who are, anti-Mexican, anti-immigrant. We're not. There are those people. Most of us on the right are not those people. And by digging your heels into the ground, when you've got a crisis like this, if the media was exposing this crisis, as they should, Donald Trump would be building that wall today, because Democrats would be saying, look, we got it. Like he is.
Yeah.
We got to do something.
He actually went there and yes. saw it for himself.
Right.
And realized, you know, again, 374% since October. There's
just
no question.
What happened in October? What happened in October?
It was Halloween.
Yeah, yeah.
Wasn't
there a big controversy about the border around October when everybody was saying it's a crisis? No, it's not a crisis. Oh, we'll just let people come in and don't keep people in cages. Wasn't that around that time?
I don't remember that at all.
Yeah, I don't remember that at all.
I think you're thinking of the Obama administration.
Oh,
That's when that was going on.
Is that what it was?
It is amazing. There has to be a certain amount of people, and there's seemingly few, that will admit when new evidence comes to light that their previous position was wrong. I mean, you give Friedman some credit here. I would not have called him as one of the people who would do that. But it is important, because you're right. Like, these things get done in government because both sides are like, okay, yeah, this actually is a problem. I mean, you think of what happened after 9/11, right? That's what happens, right? People are like, okay, look, we could have had a political debate about how Muslims are being targeted and unfairly accused of terrorism, but let's make sure we're secure. You know, there's those little debates that are constant. And then when a big event comes in and people forget about those things, often to the negative, a lot of times people will forget their principles in a moment. Like, when we see this with guns, right? Like, every time there's a mass shooting, everyone, you know, there's half of the country saying, okay, we got to take their guns away because this one person who we all agree is evil and should go to prison did something terrible with them. So that can be bad. I mean, never let a crisis go to waste is not a good instinct.
No, it's not.
It's not. But this is just recognizing, okay, the crisis is there. We're not trying to implement some crazy, restrictive, unconstitutional policy. We're saying we have a border, issue. We can't control it with the resources that we have, or really, I don't think any resources. So we need to be able to block as many of these people as possible.
I think this is the way the country might have felt around 1850, where it wasn't clear it was clear that things weren't working, but there was still a little bit of hope that the two parties, the Democrats and the Whigs, would be able to work things out on slavery. And then it came to a point with Sumner standing up and going, neither of you guys are serious. The Democrats nor the Whigs. You're not serious. You're not doing anything about this. And some of us are actually seeing this as a real crisis. And we're out. We're out. And that's when a third party is born. And I'm telling you, I think a third party is becoming more and more of a clear answer, but it will happen with members who are on both sides right now. And it's not going to be some mamby-pamby third party. Remember, the Republicans were revolutionary. They weren't like, we're all going to get along because the Whigs and the Democrats are always fighting, so there's no labels. We're all going to get along. No.
That was not their position.
That was not the position. There is no compromise on this. This is wrong. Slavery is wrong. And
what's the issue?
That's where they went.
Because, I mean, I will say, I understand what you're saying there, and I know you have the historical knowledge to back it up. It has happened in the United States. Does not feel like a moment for that.
Does
people
you know
are
what?
So in their own. So many people think of these things as teams. It's such a binary situation right now. What is the issue that a third party can break off with Democrat support and be to unify them like that with a real moral purpose?
I think right now the Democrats are not standing up because their choice is Donald Trump, and I mean their vocal choice. I think that there is more and more hidden Democratic support for Donald Trump than anybody thinks. I could be wrong. And I hate to, I don't want to talk him up.
Happened last time. Happened in 2016, for sure.
I don't want to talk him up because whenever I talk people up, it's a kiss of death. So he's horrible and you should never vote for him. And I'm definitely never going to vote for him. Now I got that out of my system so he can win. So here's the thing. I think that there is a lot of people that just don't want to have their hat taken from them. They don't want to be called racist bigots. They just want to get along. And they're so sick of it. But they also see the handwriting on the wall. They see what's happening. You don't have to be a genius to see, wait a minute, these people are being ostracized and they used to be on my side. I kind of agree with them. And when you talk to the people of the intellectual dark web, they're all saying this. And you're seeing people say, I can't believe I'm standing with conservatives. I would have never guessed that. Just 2 years ago, I would have said, no way. But the conservative, constitutional conservative, the constitutional conservative position is the winning position. It is the I'm not a crazy radical that wants to throw all laws out. I don't want, you know, just chaos on the street. I'm somebody who believes in government, and I believe in a limited government. But there are some things that have to change. And this is not working as we're doing it. And so I don't hate my neighbor. I don't want to hate my neighbor. I don't hate straight people. I don't hate gay people. I don't hate white people. I don't hate black people. I'm tired of being put in a group.
Yeah. I think if there is one issue that would unify people like that, and you've seen it in a lot of these podcasts that you've done, there's a great series of podcasts coming on, and you can binge through a ton of them as well. They're all available at glenbeck.com. and on YouTube and everywhere else. But the idea of this pushback against political correctness, I think, is one of those things that unifies people. We saw this with Kavanaugh, where, like, okay, he's being accused of these terrible things. A lot of people who were even on the left said, wait a minute, I've got a son. I'm not at all comfortable with the standard that any woman from 30 years in his past can ruin his life in the future.
Correct.
That's not an issue that's Democrat or Republican.
No.
Any mother would feel that. And it happened. I mean, people really did say the same thing with, you know, when it comes to some of the gender issues, some of the those issues where we all understand and we've always understood that X, Y, and Z is true. And you're trying to come in here and not only say that X, Y, and Z aren't true, but you're saying I'm evil if I think the old way was correct.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a big step for people to take. It's obviously not the right way to go.
When conservative means I want to conserve and preserve logic,
truth,
reason, truth, discussion. I mean, that's when America becomes conservative. And if we were better at messaging, that's what we'd be saying a conservative is right now. A conservative is to say, I preserve the Constitution of the United States and I preserve the Bill of Rights. I am trying to conserve science and reason and measurement and truth and history. We're not changing our history. We're not changing our language. We have problems and we can solve them, but by abandoning all reason. I don't know of a single person that says, yeah, you know, a 7-year-old kid, they should have a sex change. They should start giving a 7-year-old kid hormones. That's insanity. That is Mengele experimentation on children. There's no data to back any of that stuff up. You don't know what that's going to do. You're experimenting on children. If that makes me a conservative to say, wait a minute, I want to wait for data. I want to see. You can't just do that to children and give it a whirl. If that's what it means to be a conservative, I think we're in the majority.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Hey, it's Glenn, and if you like what you hear on the program, you should check out Pat Gray Unleashed. His podcast is available wherever you download your favorite podcast. So, where are we headed? And have you noticed how fast things are changing now? Okay, it's not just you. Things are changing rapidly. And there's a reason for that. And on next Wednesday, we are going to show you the reason, because we're going to show you the plan. This is one of the most amazing discoveries we have made. And you know that I have made a lot of what people would call predictions, crazy predictions. They're not predictions. I just read a lot. I study history. I look for patterns. I connect dots. It's analysis. It's not prediction. And if you take people at their word, when people tell you something crazy, I'm going to do this, they usually do it. I'm going to kill you. Well, I take that one seriously. I'm going to start a caliphate. I take you seriously. And then I look at the dots and the connections and the patterns of history and see, does this person have a chance to cobble together a caliphate? Yeah. Yeah, they do. The conditions are right. So then I go on the air and say, they're going to try to start a caliphate. And they do. We found a document in our research on socialism. We're writing a book right now on socialism. And we're also preparing all of these shows for fall, this coming fall, on socialism. And as we're doing our research, Jason, our head researcher, he comes in and he's just white. And he's like, have you ever heard of this? And I'm like, no. He's like, this is the
craziest thing I've ever read, Glenn. He said, it is the plan of what's happening today. And I start reading it, and I'm like, oh my gosh, this is, where did you get this? He said it was written in, I think, 1950 or 51 by the communist historian in Czechoslovakia. And it's really an evil book of how we did it. Because you have to remember, the Soviets were kept by a treaty that we signed at the end of World War II. They couldn't just march into Czechoslovakia and Poland and all those things. They just couldn't do it. They weren't allowed to take it over. So the communists wanted to spread communism throughout the world. How do we get these countries to fall? Well, their first attempt was Czechoslovakia. And Czechoslovakia was this amazing country, highest wealth per capita, I think, next to the United States. It was top five. I think it was number two. The production was incredible. Even though it was destroyed under the Nazis, it quickly came back because it was a free market democratic society. The guy who started it as the father of their country, if you will, studied over here. And so he modeled everything on us. And so it was just thriving. 1945, it's dropped from the Nazis. By 1947, they are the breadbasket of Europe. They're feeding everybody. It is roaring. By 1948-49, they flip, and they're a communist country. How the heck did that happen? Well, very carefully laid plans. And the archivist, the historian of the Communist Party in Czechoslovakia, wrote it all down. Here's how we did it.
Yeah, and in an effort to say, basically, we need to remember how we did this because it worked really well. We need to have this in the Communist Party record so we can emulate it in the future if needed.
So the reason why we found it is because it was smuggled out of the Czechoslovakia, out from the Iron Curtain, into America in 1960, and it fell into the hands of a couple of senators, and then it just disappeared. Well, we found it again, and wait until you see how far down the line we are. Remember, this is how to flip a country in 3 short years, and we are almost there, and we gotta pay attention. So next Wednesday on YouTube, Facebook, on Blaze TV, it's all free. 8 p.m., a special, Socialism, a Warning from the Dead. Don't miss it.
You're listening to the Best of the Glenn Beck Program.
All right. Let's go. Are you ready for Glenn's review of the 2019 NFL draft? Big night last night. Thousands and thousands of people. Did you see how many people were there, Pat?
Over 200,000.
Incredible.
That was unbelievable.
Are you being serious?
200,000 yeah, 200, people were there in Nashville. Going down the main road.
200,000? You go and look at the replays of that. And
yeah, not going to. I don't even know where I would find them.
Okay, well, NFL.com would probably have them. But, I mean, you know.
Scan over the audience, just that.
It's that main road. So
it looked like a million people.
It was incredible. The whole, like, yeah. Main strip. A main strip of a town?
Yeah, yes. Of Nashville. That famous.
Oh, you're kidding me.
Yeah. I can't. Broadway, right?
Just a sea of humanity, all the way back.
Didn't they used to do this at Radio City?
It used to be in Radio City every year, and they decided a few years ago. The first time they did it was in Philadelphia, right in front of what people would call the Rocky Museum.
Yeah,
and
which really pisses the snobs off.
They hate it.
And I love it. The actual name is the Rocky Museum.
Yes,
so just remember that.
It's the snobs that are wrong.
Yes,
but you know that whole. If you remember standing at the top, what I think you were able to make it there after a couple of hours. When you're on the top of the stairs there, and you look down the street, it just goes on forever. Mm-hmm. And they filled like that entire street. Same thing here.
It's crazy.
Incredible. 200,000 people. I mean, the idea that the NFL is dying is maybe a little preemptive.
Maybe.
Here. Maybe. But It may die after your draft review from yesterday. We will see, though, because I think there's some good news in here for Glenn Beck as well.
Thank you very much.
Some impressive things. And one thing.
This almost sounds like it's a sports, you know, like you're a sports center.
Yeah, that's right.
So talk about it in like a sportscaster way, and it will sound official.
I will say, going in, I did not think Glenn Beck would be able to pull this off, but he did accomplish one thing that no other draft expert was able to accomplish. Rock, I think, was your name. And it was, and I'd love to get your reaction before we dive in.
My reaction to that was that it was his predictions were incredible.
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 I would agree.
I said,
they were
I said that earlier. It was incredible.
All right. Well, go to the.
Oh, I'm going to keep watching.
Thank you. We appreciate that.
And, wow, they can hear me.
Like every other sports
Damn,
program,
Alexa.
We're going to give you our reaction before we tell you what happened. Because that's what sports programs do. Okay, so the first overall pick in the draft of the Arizona Cardinals. Glenn Beck predicted Devin White would get selected.
Now, because he looked happy.
Yes, because
he does look happy.
He does look happy.
Was he happy last night?
So the experts predicted he would go fifth in the draft. Glenn predicted he would go first. The actual answer, fifth. So,
okay,
so
that's a
Glenn
little anticlimactic.
Loses that one.
It's a little anticlimactic. Yes. But I had him in the top 10. You gave me 20 names. I had him in the top 10.
Yes.
I had him in the top 5. I was pretty damn close.
Okay. Yes. There you go. I thought that was a relatively good pick.
All right. Thank
Although
you
did lose again.
All right.
Okay. With the second pick in the draft, Glenn predicted that Drew Locke would go second.
Which we tried to dissuade him from that a little bit, telling him they already have a quarterback there,
yeah.
And they paid him a lot of money.
Yeah, $137.5 million dollars just but, 1 year ago.
Is he in
ago.
The top five?
So Drew Locke.
You didn't tell me that this was not hand grenades.
No. No, okay. I know. It's not.
I just need to be close. Hand grenades. I just need to be close.
I think it is close.
All right.
So I'm judging this as, did you come as close as the actual experts? So Drew Locke, Glenn predicted to go second overall. The experts predicted to go 30th overall. And he did not get drafted in the first round at all. So he's still on the board.
Wow.
You're a tad more wrong than the experts
I need
were.
It. Yes. So what I, okay. This is not only not hand grenades. This isn't small.
It's not even nuclear weapons.
Tactical nukes. Yeah.
Next up, Glenn had Juwan Taylor going third to the New York Jets. Glenn predicted Juwan Taylor to go third. The experts predicted him to go 12th. Actual draft position? Undrafted in the first round,
okay,
which is a surprise.
But wait a minute. What about Christian Wilkinson? Because I said he could also might go third.
Yeah, I know. You kept saying that because the two teams were from the same city, you could switch them. That's not a rule.
Yeah, no. It's what it should be.
So
they're both fake. They're both fake New York teams. Neither of them in New York. They're both fake.
Well, that's true. They're both in the same stadium in New Jersey. But that was a fair point.
Stupid.
But again, you were wrong. So you're 0 for 3 so far, but things get better. Your fourth pick, you selected
Jonah Williams. Yes.
Jonah Williams, Glenn selected fourth. The experts predicted he would go ninth. Actual draft position, 11th. So Glenn is wrong.
Okay, I thought there was some good news happening.
No, there is.
It's coming.
There's some good
news. Okay, all right.
Okay, and maybe is this it? The Tampa Bay
Buccaneers. I don't think so. Just based on the crowd reaction yesterday, boys.
Glenn, really high on Bunchy Stallings from Kentucky. I mean,
a little higher than the experts were.
Really high.
I had a good reason. I don't remember what it was, but it was a good reason for Bunchy.
Yes, they were all really good reasons, as we heard yesterday.
Yes.
So Bunchy Stallings, Glenn predicted to be fifth.
Bunchy was excited about your pick, though.
He was.
He was really
I bet
excited.
His dad called him and said, Glenn Beck just predicted. And then he was like, not the guy who every time he endorses a candidate, they lose.
Yeah, same guy.
Yes. So Bunchy Stallings predicted to go fifth by Glenn Beck. Experts predicted him to go 216th. He was undrafted in the top 32, sadly.
Okay. Well, so neither of us was right.
You're 0 for 5. Again, they were close again. Okay, right. Next up, though, we have Christian Wilkins.
I said he'd go sixth.
Christian Wilkins goes sixth. The experts predicted him to go 13th. So really close range here.
Right.
The actual pick, 13th. The experts.
Hey,
right
I'm
the
looking
button
for the good news.
No, but there's good news coming
up.
It's
coming.
Okay. Number seven, you may know this one if you followed it at all. Kyler Murray. Glenn predicted Kyler Murray to go and I guess play behind Nick Foles in the giant contract he just signed instead of going to the Cardinals. He did go number one overall. Glenn predicted him number seven. And so did the experts predicted him number one
hand
as
grenade,
well.
Shrapnel hit him.
Yeah,
shrapnel
kind of.
Hit him.
He's in the general. He at least could see the explosion
him.
From where he was.
He could hit him.
Okay, so the top seven, you are 0 for 7. However, We go on to Ed Oliver to the Detroit Lions.
Yes.
Ed Oliver. Now, I know you were passionate about this particular pick. I can't remember why.
This was my first draft pick at number eight.
Surprised.
Ed looks endlessly surprised.
Mm-hmm. He does.
And, you know, that's the way everybody in Detroit, when they open their door in the morning, they're like, oh, crap, I'm still here?
Yeah. And like
what the hell happened?
As the bullets fly by,
right.
They say, wow, another bullet flew by.
What am I doing here still?
He may also have been surprised that he was, first of all, picked eighth, but before the first seven picks.
Right.
Which was interesting.
So he was my first pick at eight.
Yeah. So that's not confusing at all. So Ed Oliver, Glenn predicted him to go number eight. The experts predicted him to go number four. Actual pick, number nine. Glenn outperforms the experts.
Thank you.
Amazing.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, it took me a little while.
It did.
Either that or I got it right on the first time and I should have stopped.
Yeah, but possibly.
Well, it's a stretch to say you got it right.
Well, you missed by one pick.
he's definitely dead. If you're standing that close to a hand grenade, you're dead.
Yeah, and it's not horseshoes or hand grenades, is the saying.
No,
okay, but there is one thing that Glenn Beck did that no one else that I saw as an expert actually did. It's an amazing thing. Glenn Beck predicted for the ninth pick, Daniel Jones, the quarterback from Duke. Now, Jones was predicted to go 17th by experts. Glenn predicted him number nine. Actual pick, number six.
Thank you.
Yes.
Closer. Thank you.
Closer, not only
Thank
closer,
you.
But the only expert I saw, and I use you as an expert after
Thank
that
you.
Pick.
Thank
the
you.
Only expert I saw picking Daniel Jones in the top nine was Glenn Beck, and he nailed it. Only missing by three.
I want you to put that. I want an article written about that in sportsy kind of terms and throw that
sportsy
out there.
Sportsy kind of terms coming
That's
to
right.
you, Glenn. We'll get to that. And the good news continues here. So now you're now 2 for 9.
Uh-huh.
Yes, you missed the first seven.
Right.
Now, but you're 2 for 9.
Ish.
Last one.
2 for 9-ish.
2 for 9-ish.
You know, because...
Well, you beat the experts on 2 of 9.
Okay, yes.
Well, for not having any information.
Pretty good. Pretty good.
Really good.
Carl Granderson was Glenn's 10th overall pick. The experts predicted him to go 251st. Actual pick... He was not picked yet, so Glenn did lose that one. But you only missed by 241.
Okay, but he was closer than the experts.
Yes.
Twice.
Twice.
2 out of 10. Yeah. That is not
bad.
Now,
it's
let's
bad.
Turn this around. As you see, I have a bunch of teams bunch up of on the board.
Animals and...
some might call them shields. Some might call them shields.
Okay.
This is the Game of Thrones. Now, you probably know more about the Game of Thrones than I do about football.
I don't think there's any doubt of that.
Right.
Yeah, I've seen two
so
full episodes.
So, I'm giving you, with their names, Frumpy Girl. She's 5'1", 112 pounds. That's all you get. You have to put her in the right house. We do our Game of Thrones and see how close he becomes. He comes and gets to that in 1 minute. Yeah.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.